Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday. So here we go with the much-anticipated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. I hope you're doing well. I hope everybody out there is doing well. Listen, I just got kicked out of the Secret Cooking Society. I kept spilling the beans. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Duff delivers. That's two good ones in a row, and his delivery is so hilarious. Thanks to Duff, and thanks to Phil Kogan for being here, making his Talk as Jericho debut. He's the host of The Amazing Race on CBS. Season 36 of the competition reality show started on Wednesday, and Phil's given us a sneak peek and sharing some of his favorite stories from his 36 seasons as host. The contestants visit two new countries this season, the Dominican Republic and Barbados. We talk about all the countries and cultures that Phil's visited, how his travel for the show differs from the contestants. He talks about the research he does for every episode and drops some of the fun tidbits he's picked up along the way. We talk food, jet lag, sleeping on planes, trains, and automobiles. We talk the craziest challenges, his favorite cities and locations, and the most bizarre countries he's been to, and what has surprised him at any point during filming. He also has great stories about how they were able to film The Amazing Race during COVID. What a crazy time that was. It's a whirlwind global trip that it usually films in just over 20 days, but we're going to do it tonight here in 1 hour right now with Phil Kogan of The Amazing Race on Talk is Jericho.
All right. So Phil Kogan is here. Talk about longevity in your job. 36 seasons of The Amazing Race.
Yeah. I mean, not something I saw happening, to be honest with you, but it's happened. And thank God. And thank God I love the job. I don't feel like stuck with it. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
What makes the Amazing Race have such longevity, in your opinion?
I think quality, definitely consistency, a great team, striving to be better every time. And then there's that X factor that you don't know about, which is why certain people are attracted to certain people that you can't really describe, you know. So many people try to line people up with a blind date and they get it wrong because there's that whatever it is, that je ne sais quoi, that you can't really kind of put your finger on. So most reality shows, I think it's something like 85% never get past season one. A lot of those shows are made by people who've got a lot of experience, are really good. You think they would knock it out of the park every single time, but they don't. And I've been involved in things that haven't worked for one reason or another, and you're not really sure why. You just know that it doesn't resonate for whatever reason. Maybe you feel like it's made really well, but for whatever reason, it's not a commercial success. So there's an X factor part of it that you can't really put your finger on. And the show certainly has that as well.
I think a lot of it too is the talent involved. It's like any other, like you mentioned, so many reality shows don't really work. And this one does because of the characters and the on-screen relationships every season.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, I guess if you equate it to wrestling, there's certain characters that get thrust into the limelight and then for one reason or another, they don't work. And maybe on paper and maybe just in discussions with people who you would think would know everything about what might work, for whatever reason, those characters just don't land. You don't really know until you try. And thankfully, we've got a good following and people have stuck with us year after year, 22 years, 36 seasons. And people are always asking me, oh, what's new and different about this season? And while it's tempting to jumped the shark, so to speak, which is an old reference from Happy Days.
Right.
For those people who are old enough, I think you might be old enough to remember.
I do, for sure.
That's where, for people who don't know, Fonzie, Henry Winkler, in a leather jacket skiing down in Malibu, jumped a shark because they were literally trying to pop the ratings for a show called Happy Days, which Ron Howard was in. And sometimes shows try those little tricks, and they do try new and different, and sometimes new and different doesn't save a show. So people ask that. That's probably the most frequent question I get asked season after season by journalists, and I understand why, because they want to be able to write the headline, you know, Amazing Race, unlike any other Amazing Race that came before it, you know, unlike the other 35 that came before it, this time they're going to space. Find out what happens when they read the clue at the International Space Station. You know, they want the whatever it is. And I've been thinking long and hard, you know, I've thought long and hard about how to answer that question. And I say, well, our show, what's new and different is everything, because our show is new and different every single season, because new characters, new places, new things that we do. And not all reality shows have that. A dancing show, a singing show, a cooking show, they go back to the same place and they do the same thing. They sing, they dance, they cook. We sing, dance, cook, ride donkeys, swim, wrestle. I think we've got some wrestling actually coming up very soon on this season. We do it all, and we're never in the same place. So what's new and different? Everything. Every time they rip and read an envelope and they see what's inside, there's a surprise. It's basically a surprise show. It's like the unwrapping of a Christmas present every time a team reads a clue. You know, make your way to the top of the mountain and you're going to skydive or you're going to paraglide over the city, land in the city, and then begin your journey. That's what's new and different. Everything, every season.
And that's like what you said, like just to kind of for anybody that doesn't know the premise of the show is you have a couple and they have to, like you said, it's basically a scavenger hunt activity where you go find the envelopes, find out where you're going, but you're going everywhere around the world to do so.
Yep. 12, 13, sometimes 14 teams of two, married couples, best friends, brothers, sisters, siblings, cousins, old, young, tall, short. Some vote Republicans, some vote Democrat, some are independents. They're from all different walks of life. They're an eclectic group of people who have a pre-existing relationship, and they follow a series of clues around the world, racing from one country to another. The slowest get eliminated along the way until you end up with the fastest racing for the $1 million at the end. So it's a pretty, I want to say, simple format, but also hugely ambitious. Sometimes simple is hard, and a lot of shows, the formats are too complicated. This one's pretty easy to understand. Read a clue, follow the directions, go to the next place, complete whatever it is you have to complete so you can get the next clue, rip and read that clue, then go to the next place, doing anything and everything along the way, whether it's making bread or learning how to dance or march or drive a tank or whatever it is, to get the next clue and to keep on racing.
Throughout your 36 seasons and 36 sets of winners, what's the strategy, like the best strategy to try and use to win the race?
If you look at the winners, they vary tremendously. We've had people win the race who, from the outside, you could classify as dysfunctional. You could say this is a dysfunctional relationship. But if we know anything about love, we know that we can't judge what works, why relationships work, why some people are together and why those relationships work. I mean, I've seen couples and I'm like, how the hell is this relationship working? And then you find out they've been together 20 years and all that bickering and yelling and screaming and all the rest of it is all part of it. And they love each other deeply. And yet from the outside might look totally like they're going to break up. And then other times, you know, you've got friends and you think they've got the perfect relationship. You find out they're broken up and you're like, what the hell happened? Because they don't express any of it. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, luck plays a role in how a team wins. Luck is definitely there. Consistency. Ideally, you want teams where they're equal contributors in the team. but that doesn't always happen. Sometimes one person is stronger than another. I don't know how to answer that question because I'm not really sure what the one constant is.
I would think probably, like you said, the relationship and the teamwork and the chemistry between the partners.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Right.
Communication and however, whatever form that takes, whether that's yelling and screaming, communicating, or whether that's, you're not hearing me, listen to my words. I don't know. It's we see it all. And sometimes some partners are too, they're not aggressive enough, maybe, because they don't push back enough. And then other times you see like there's a battle for control where you've got two sort of alpha characters that both want to be in control and they won't let go. And the sparks fly, which of course makes for interesting TV.
That's what you're hoping for. Have you ever had a duo break up in the middle of the show and say, we'll never talk to you again, we're quit?
I mean, going back to season two, we did have a couple that were, their relationship was already on the rocks when they came in. We have had a separated couple because they were still friends, but not actually romantically still connected. We've had people get together. It's certainly an interesting one. When we hear people say, oh, we really want to come on the show because we want to test our relationship. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. If you feel like you need to test your relationship, I don't know if you really want to do it on Amazing Race, because that could be the recipe for disaster.
How do you get on the show? Do they have like an audition process? People, probably thousands of people want to be on every season.
Yep, thousands of people want to be on, and they apply. We should get a short list. We bring the short list in. We audition them. And then there's lots of factors that go into it. I mean, they have to take some time off work. We shoot the show pretty quickly, but it's still 20-something days that you're off work. And then it's the balance of the teams. You know, like I was mentioning before, the old and the young and the varied. You want to have an eclectic group. You don't want it to be homogenized too much.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you first heard about this show, like how did you get this gig, you know, 36 seasons ago?
I started in front of a camera when I was really young, like 19. And most of the stuff I've done is adventure type content, mostly outside, a lot of travel stuff. So before I even started on Amazing Race, I'd been to close to 100 countries before I got started on Race and done a lot of different things like unofficial bungee jumping record and diving the world's longest underwater caves and dining on an erupting volcano, putting a golf ball across Scotland, like just really ridiculous, silly, fun, adventurous things. And I was up for a few shows, including Survivor, and then that got shortlisted for Amazing Race and thankfully got offered the job. They actually came to me just through word of mouth, I guess. Like, oh, he's a guy who's traveled a lot. He's done a lot of different adventures and maybe he'd be the right guy.
It's interesting too, though, like you mentioned, there's so many reality shows and most of them don't make it out of season one or two. How was the show received in season one?
We got off to a bit of a slow start because we premiered on September the 8th, 2001. We shot in New York. So even the footage of our opening show included the Twin Towers. And the idea of traveling and the focus on traveling and a travel show at that time almost derailed the show because it just wasn't a priority, and rightly so, for people. They weren't sort of ready to just watch a bunch of people have a great time traveling around the world after such a huge terrorist attack. I would say we got off to a very slow start. So the show got pulled, was off the air for a while, came back. Slowly started to build momentum. We weren't sure whether we were going to get a season two, and there was a year before we then got a pickup on a season two. And then it slowly started to build a fan base. And I would say it was probably not until season three when we got nominated for an Emmy Award. for season three and then actually won that people were like, well, hold on a second. What's this show called?
Right,
and that's sort of how we became part of the zeitgeist. And then, you know, we're not a show that has ever tried to jump the shark or create a train wreck to get everybody to come to see the train wreck. You know, you hear people say things like, oh, I don't like that show, but did you see that fight with the such and such and the so and so? And it's sort of like they're watching because they know there's something that everybody is talking about. They may not like the show and or the content, but they still turn up to see the whatever it is that people are talking about. And so we've never tried to create the, you know, the jump the shark thing. And we've relied on just being consistent and trying to keep the show a family show. It's worked. Whatever it is we're doing has been working. So we're trying to just keep that consistent.
How long does it take to film a season?
Just over 20 days. So we shoot 12 shows in just over 20 days. It's a pretty brutal schedule.
Mm.
It happens really, really quick. I mean, in the beginning, the very first season, we actually took 30 days to shoot a season. And then just with the economics and then becoming more efficient, managed to skinny that up to around 20 days.
And are you traveling all those 20 days, like keeping up with everybody?
Yeah, so I have to get ahead because I introduce all the challenges at the challenge locations. I can only go so far ahead of them because a lot of times it'll be like, you know, a challenge where there's 10 donkeys and I need to introduce the donkeys and the donkeys don't turn up until a few hours before the teams are going to be there and use the donkeys because the donkeys can't just sit there, you know, for hours on end. So there's a lot of logistical challenges. And of course, I don't get to see everything that's happened on the course while it's happening. And yet when the viewers watch the show, they've seen everything and they've seen a lot of things that I haven't seen based on recording it immediately after they finished the leg. And a lot of people are like, oh yeah, that's right. You wouldn't have seen what we saw because all of that stuff that you didn't see has just been shown to us in a compressed form. So people are always asking me, what are you doing at the pit stop? Well, I do the introduction to the pit stop and then I do the introduction to the next show. But the most important thing I'm doing is trying to track what's going on with the story. Who did what? Where did they do it? How did it happen? Who said what? Someone got a flat tire, who fixed them? And so I'm tracking all that story because when they come in, then I have to interview them. And the only way for me to know all of the stuff that I need to ask them is based on, in today's world, WhatsApp and tracking the story.
It seems like every season you have a few celebrities.
Yeah.
How do they usually fare? Because I know something like, I know the Battaglia brothers won the one season, the hockey players.
It's mixed bag with the celebrity aspect, to be honest with you. Some fans are not fans of having celebrities, and others love it. This season, we do have Rod and Letitia, and Rod is a former NFL player, and he's definitely, you know, someone that people would know. You know, football is an interesting professional sport because unlike basketball, where you're really getting to see the faces and you recognize faces, it's quite different from, say, you know, wrestling, where you really see faces, you see the character, you really get to know the recognizable characters. Football, you know, they're wearing helmets. But yeah, definitely with Rod Gardner, he's a known entity, you know, NFL player. The guy is ripped, oh my God. And his wife, Letitia, they own a fitness company and physically super impressive, both of them. Sometimes they'll approach us, celebrity will come to us. I know, I remember being stopped at the Emmys once by Neil Patrick Harris. He stopped me once at the Emmys and said, hey, would you ever consider having me on? And I often think, from the outside, it looks pretty appealing, but the reality of not getting sleep for 20 something days might also be a little challenging for some celebrities. If you remember Tyler Oakley, who was an influencer, he came on. And then we've had, technically, I don't know if you call them celebrities, but we've had celebrity reality stars from other shows, from like Big Brother, Jordan, who came over, and she was a part of Big Brother. But nobody. Well, we had Mike White, who directed White Lotus and School of Rock, but not like major.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, like we haven't had a Drew Barrymore or a Neil Patrick Harris or a Matthew McConaughey level celebrity yet.
Imagine that might be kind of distracting if you were at that level of fame and trying to do the race with just people wanting your picture and autograph and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I could imagine it would be a hindrance for some teams, especially if they're really recognized in certain parts of the world. Because as you know, certain celebrities can go into parts of the world where nobody gives them even, you know, recognizes them at all. And then other places where it's like they're maybe more popular there than they are even back in the United States.
This season, you actually go to Rihanna's house, but she's not a contestant. You just go to her house.
Yeah, no, I was looking out for her. We went to Barbados, first time we've ever been there. We also went to the Dominican Republic, another first time country that we've been to. Rihanna does a lot to create awareness for Barbados. We showed off the island she comes from, and who knows, maybe she'll tune in and watch. I hear she's a bit of a reality fan. I don't know if she likes Amazing Race, but hopefully someone will tell her, hey, you got to watch this.
Talk about season 33 that you had to film during the pandemic. Kind of talk about the challenges that you faced for that.
Yeah, shooting during the pandemic was like making another show on top of the show you're making. I have a show called Tough as Nails. We were one of the first shows to come back in production. And I think the protocols that our EIC, our executive in charge of production, wrote for that show was something like 300 pages of protocols and how it was all going to work. And as you know, the whole COVID situation it got political and there was a lot we didn't know. And then when we did know, people were like, well, we shouldn't have done that. Sort of like playing Monday morning quarterback with how we should have dealt with certain things based on knowledge that we didn't have before. There was a lot to it. There was because in hindsight, why were we wiping down stuff? In hindsight, why were we not allowed to go out into open spaces? You know, there were a lot of things that we all look back on and everybody wants to be the expert after the fact. Mm-hmm. But there was mad panic, if you remember, in the world around that time. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. I mean, I was wiping down my groceries because I didn't know. I was just like, I was like everybody else. We were all like venturing into this, like, what the hell is going on with the world right now? So extremely challenging, but super proud of the entire team for keeping everybody safe. We did a very good job, I think, at being able to produce a show when a lot of other shows were not producing shows because it was just too hard. It was very expensive. And like I said, the logistics involved were so complicated that it was like we were doing two shows at one time. It was tough. It was really tough.
Was it hard to like have to restart the race after taking such a long break?
It was hard because we came back with things that we used to take for granted, jumping on a plane, going to, you know, hotels, certain hotels, all these things that we used to take for granted. All of a sudden, we couldn't just do the same thing again. We had to tick certain boxes. And I mean, I got so many damn COVID tests. I my nose would just, you know, I'd have to swap the testing side, but my nose would just start bleeding. I was getting so many tests. I think I counted in one year there, shooting Tough as Nails and seasons of Amazing Race. I think we shot two seasons of Tough as Nails and an Amazing Race all in one year. And I think I added up that I had something like 210 tests or something in the year because we were getting tested every other day. It was tough, but we got it done. And I think our fans were happy that it wasn't the way race was before the pandemic, but at least we were able to produce something.
Well, and that's the thing too. And some countries were slower than others to allow you to return to form. I know like Japan took an extra year and a half longer than everybody else. So did that affect anything for, you know, future seasons?
Yeah. I mean, even in New Zealand, I mean, my mom was unwell and I couldn't get on the plane to go see her which was, you know, the worst feeling in the world. You take it for granted that, you know, where my family is from there and you want to get on a plane and go home. And they had like wait-listed quarantine protocols, and New Zealand really, like, they isolated themselves from the rest of the world in a way that now a lot of people are being critical and said, we waited too long, we held out too long before we allowed businesses back in. And I've got friends who were in the tourism business, and a couple of them really suffered because their business was so dependent on overseas visitors, and all of a sudden that revenue stream was just dying out. And, right, you know, in hindsight, it's like, again, it's like, yeah, they could have opened the doors earlier. We could have done, you know, there's a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas, but mistakes were made. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of those were mistakes made because of not knowing,
yeah,
you know? Right. And so it's easy to point fingers after the fact, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I think people's intentions were right, but there's a lot we still don't know.
So as the host of the show, what's kind of some of the most challenging things for you?
I guess the sleep deprivation is tough. Staying on top of the story when you're tired, you're operating with your brain is, you know, jet lag is a real thing. You know,
yeah.
I lose a lot of weight. I'm not somebody who needs to lose weight. I'm about 180 and I can lose up, you know, upwards of 10, 12 pounds just from broken sleep and broken eating patterns. I try to get myself in really good shape before I go so that I'm and as healthy as possible and I sleep as much as possible.
Why is the sleep deprivation there? You have to be on call 24 hours a day sort of thing, or?
Well, a lot of times we're sleeping on planes. The worst are when you've got like multiple flights through the middle of the night, but you might not get to a hotel room for days. I mean, in the early days, it was pretty bad. I remember we didn't get to a hotel room, like a actually put your head on a pillow for 7 straight days.
Wow.
And a lot of times you like shoot a show for an entire day, be a long, long day. You rush to the airport, you get a 11:30 flight, PM flight or something like that. So you're in the airport, you can't really sleep there, get on a flight. And then you might have like a 4-hour flight that leaves at 11:30. And then with the time change, you're arriving in another destination at 6:30, 7 in the morning. And you get right off the plane, having not had a lot of sleep, and you've been going day after day after day after day, and then bam, straight out, mm-hmm, out to location, wash my hair on the side of the street and grab whatever I need out of my suitcase, change there in the street or in the car, and straight into working another full day, and then straight back to the airport that night, then on another overnight flight. The overnight flights are tough, especially like, sure, red-eye overnight flights. Ironically, we're all like super happy when we find out we've got like a flight over 8 hours because we figure we can actually get some sleep. I can't tell you the number of times I've woken up with an embarrassing drool hanging out of my mouth, you know, like before, yeah, the plane's taken off, I've got like a big drool. I didn't even remember taking off, and we're like 2 hours into the flight and I've been sitting there with this drool hanging out of my mouth. So, and by the way, I'm not complaining about any of this at all, because I love my job, but it's, sure, probably not as glamorous as some people would think.
Yeah, well, travel in general is not glamorous. And like you said, when the whole show is based on traveling as much as you can over 3 weeks, I totally understand where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, and travel, you know, when I first started traveling, it was in the 70s. I was really young. I think I got on my first jet plane when I was 3. Back in the day, I don't know about you, but my parents made me dress up. You wore like your best outfit when you got on a plane. And so you were extremely well dressed. It was like a thing you did. You got dressed to go on the flight. Now you've got people getting on flights. They're wearing like a muscle shirt or something. And there's a lot of hair sticking out of the, you know, popping out of the arms.
Shorts on planes.
They might as well be wearing like a pair of Speedos and a, It amazes me what people wear, and sometimes, you know, they maybe have been traveling for a while and they maybe don't smell the greatest. And sometimes, you know, I wouldn't want to sit next to you on the plane because you're a big guy, and sometimes it's a little challenging. I remember I had a 15-hour flight once. I had a middle seat, 15-hour flight out of LAX. I was flying to Taipei. On one side of me, I had someone who was wearing an outfit. Let's just say that there was a lot of material to this outfit. It was like someone had gathered up a bunch of curtains and thrown them, you know, cut some holes out and then put their head through. So this outfit was spilling over into my chair. And then on the other side was a gentleman who, he could have been a wrestler, actually. He was big, powerful guy with huge shoulders. He was so broad sitting in the seat that his shoulders were like coming over. So I'm sitting in the middle and I'm like, oh my God, 15 hours. I was getting cramps in my legs. And the worst thing is we were right up on the bulkhead. So I couldn't act. I've got long legs. So I couldn't actually stretch my legs out. And anyway, listen to me whining away. But my
you need
point
a better
is,
travel agent.
Yeah. My point is travel has changed a lot from when I was a kid. That jet setting glamour part of travel, I miss it, to be honest with you. I wish people would put just a little bit more effort into wearing something a little smarter on the plane. But, you know, maybe I'm a snob. I don't know.
What are some of your favorite countries you've been to? You've been to so many over the years.
Yeah, I've been to about 140. France is a go-to for me. I've been there, gosh, I don't know, 30, 40 times. Mm. I rode my bike around France in 2013, and I really got to see France up close. I retraced the 1928 Tour de France on a 1928 Tour de France bicycle, 150 miles a day. So I got to see locals, be with locals. I really enjoyed that trip to France. I love Italy and Italian culture. I love Thailand, the food, the people. India is incredible. They have a slogan for India. It's like India, incredible India. I totally agree. You know, you've got everything from Varanasi to Jaipur and the Pink City all the way down to the south. And I'm a big cricket fan. The cricket culture there is awesome. They have the international, the Indian Professional League of Cricket. I've got a lot of friends who work for the IPL. So I love India. And of course, listen, I'm from New Zealand. So what am I going to say? I mean,
right. What's the most bizarre country you've been to?
Oof. I remember I went to Madagascar. Madagascar, for those people who don't know, is off the east coast of the southern part of Africa. I guess there's the cartoon Madagascar where, yeah, people identify. But I remember going to a market there, and camel is a thing. People like camel. And I saw parts of camels at this market, and it was definitely an eye-opener for me just to see that. You know, I try to be very careful about judging places that I go to in a negative way, only because what might seem bizarre and different to us is quite normal for others. You know, I remember we were in Korea and where live octopus is a thing. And like, that's a delicacy. And it's delicious, by the way. It sounds crazy, but it is delicious. But where some people might think that that's weird and crazy and they would never do it or whatever, there are other cultures that might look at some of the things we have, like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or a hamburger, and think that that's weird. So I think it's important when you travel to sort of just keep an open mind and be less judgmental and maybe more curious. Like, really, you you eat this stuff, huh? Okay. You know, like in India, they eat, in Japan, they eat some pretty bizarre food there. You've been there?
You can actually find, I've been to Japan about 60 times.
Oh my God. And this is for wrestling?
For wrestling, yeah.
So what are some of the weirdest things you've eaten in Japan?
I've never eaten it, but I've seen on the menu a few times, cow vagina.
Ah.
That's one.
Okay.
Which does not seem the most appetizing. It still always makes me laugh. You said squid and corn on pizza, which is always interesting.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that. But then, like you said, you have to ingratiate yourself with the culture.
Yes.
And there's some of the most amazing food I've ever had in Japan.
And the thing about Japan, that's amazing that you've been there 60 times. I mean, I know they love their wrestling, don't they?
Yeah.
Did you ever go to a sumo match when you were there?
I went once in about 96 or 97 to see. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different culture, too. Once again, even talking about food, like a sumo match lasts maybe 12 seconds, and it doesn't really make sense to us, but it does to them, right?
Yeah, and I love that. And the other thing, if people go to Japan, they definitely should go with that. I love the ritual with the salt and the respect that they have for each other as competitors. You know, the sportsmanship is really, I love that aspect of it. They have Kirin racing there, which is the cycling where I'm a big cyclist and I love that as an event, and that's really, really fun to watch. Baseball is really fun there. And then street food in Japan is spectacular. So, yeah, it's all in how you come into a place. The fact that you have been there 60 times, every time you go back, you would have, you know, learned something new and different. And, yeah, I always advise people, don't compare where you are with where you've come from. Just try to be more curious about where you are, embrace it, and try to learn something. Just be curious.
But I mean, if you didn't have that attitude, there's no way you'd still be doing this show. I mean, obviously, that's a great attitude to have when your job is to travel to new countries and experience new cultures.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's like you're visiting somebody else's home. If you were to go to someone's home and they said, can you take off your shoes, please, before you come into the house? You wouldn't think twice about it, right? You would do it. So I always say to people, just remember, you are a visitor, you are a guest in somebody else's country, so be respectful of their wishes. Just like if people come to America, there's certain things in America that would be looked at as disrespectful. If the anthem was playing, for instance, and you didn't stand with everybody, or you were talking through the anthem or something at a baseball game or something, you know, that could be deemed as disrespectful where we come from. So it's the same thing. You kind of like have to read the room, be aware of your surroundings, and show respect. And when you do, that respect does come back. It's an acknowledgement that you are aware of the fact that they do things a certain way, and you're adjusting what might be your normal behavior to adapt to a different type of behavior for where you are, like covering for women to cover their shoulders before they go into a sacred place. Do what's expected. Don't fight it and be like, oh, well, we don't have to do this at home. I don't understand why we have to do it here. You're not where you come from. You're not where you came from. You're in a different place now.
You say you've been to 140 countries, which is amazing. Have you had any, I'm sure you've had a million experiences with the locals and just seeing certain things that stand out in your mind forever?
I want to immerse myself in the experience of the locals. That's why I love working and traveling, because when I have somebody, a facilitator, a driver working with me, I'm able to say, where do you go to coffee? Where do you go for coffee? Where do you go for lunch? I can learn a little bit about their world. And for a few days, I get to experience their world for a little bit. Oh, that's a different way of having your coffee, with a little bit of sugar or no milk, but you have this little type of sweet creamer. Or I want to try new things, and I want to immerse myself in that. So I'm always looking for that experience. And the other part of it is, I really love the research that goes into writing the scripts for the show. I love the research that goes into learning about the places, new places that I haven't been to before, and then being able to incorporate that knowledge into my scripts. And then when I go there, looking out for the things that I've researched and I've looked for, that layer is something. It's like I get paid to go to a geography class, and I really love geography.
So do you do a lot of research before you go to the countries?
Yeah, I'm looking for nuggets of information. You know, there's more Rolls Royces per capita in Hong Kong than there are anywhere else in the world. I'm looking for those fun factoids. You know, if we're in Bangladesh and we're looking at the capital, you know, it's the most densely, I believe this fact still stands, the most densely populated city in the world, you know, a number of people per square mile. I'm wanting to find things that people have with takeaways. We went to Slovenia for the first time just recently, and it's the beekeeping capital of the world. There's 8,000 caves. The birthplace of spelunking is there. It's one of the best places to go paragliding, gliding, and hang gliding. And so you want to be able to share all this information with the viewer. I love when viewers then send me photographs and they say, well, hey, Phil, we're here with a beekeeper in Slovenia. It's like they are paying attention, and there are takeaways. And a lot of people who are curious are travelers and adventurers. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any input in the countries that you're going to, or the challenges at this point in time?
I have had, and I do from time to time. I mean, it's certainly, it's a collaborative There's a lot of people putting in a lot of different ideas. Sometimes we'll have like a couple of countries with some cool challenges that we want, and then we're sort of figuring out what other country would be good to add with those two countries, say a 6-hour flight away from each other. What's another country that we could put in the middle to add or divert off slightly? If we were going from, say, Jordan to Italy, could we add Slovenia? Or could we add Tunisia or Egypt on the way through? You know, like, how do we structure the course so that it makes sense for flight availability? And logistics is really a big factor in the choice of the different countries, for sure.
I'm sure there's an element of danger to the show. Has there ever been some injuries or even serious injuries from any of the contestants?
We pride ourselves in keeping everybody safe. It is literally the number one priority. People are, you know, they say, oh, you must get really nervous when the teams are bungee jumping or walking a tightrope or something. And I'm never worried about those challenges because we're so risk adverse. We have backup to back. We have backups to backups. And again, our priority is keeping everybody safe. I think in season 7, somebody got some stitches. We've had grazed knees for sure. People twisting ankles. The thing I worry about the most is more like public transportation. Because we're not in a studio and we're not in a, you know, if you think of a show like Survivor, you basically keep everybody out of the space you're working in, and you're almost creating your own world. It's like almost like a bigger version of a studio because you keep the real world out. We literally are walking into the real world. We're on the streets in Rio. We're traveling through the deserts of Namibia, or we're out on a safari. And so our playing field, if you like, is in the real world. So then there are real world risks that come with that. Flash floods. I remember once we were at a pit stop and this crazy flash flood hit us, and all of a sudden is water like streaming right through where we had the mat. You know, it just came out of nowhere. And the river that we had, the dry riverbed that we had crossed, we couldn't get across it to get back to the city. So crazy things like that happen.
What country was that in?
I think that might have been in Botswana. It was early on in the show. The thing I worry about the most is when people get into cars, get into a random taxi somewhere, and the driver maybe is just not a good driver. You know, and you're rolling the dice there, right? Now, the crew are with the cast all the time, and so they have the ability to like be like, hey, this is not safe. Let's get out. You know, thank you very much, sir. We're going to pay you out. We want to switch out. But even a team crossing the road in a busy city, we're relying on those teams to make smart decisions about crossing the road, moving out into the road and moving traffic. Those are the things that you worry about because those are the variables that you can't control. As far as like feeling safe, and we take a lot of, we put a lot of effort into keeping everybody safe, as I mentioned. A lot of people are surprised to find out that America is not the safest country in the world. It's a safe country, but it's not the safest country in the world. There's a lot of countries that are safer, not to say that America isn't safe. So you can find danger in a lot of places. You have to use a lot of street smarts. And so we apply that to how we plan the course. We don't want people maybe being out in certain places in a city at night, but that applies to whether you're in Detroit, Chicago, or whether you're in Rome. It doesn't matter where you are, you have to apply certain sensibilities and make certain choices about where you are, what time it is, what you're doing, etc.
To start to wind down here, Phil, let's talk a little about season 36, some of the activities and some of the challenges. I mean, once again, it looks pretty action-packed as always.
I love that in any given season you might be, like I mentioned, we've got some wrestling, we've got some Mexican wrestling. We also get to a Mexican rodeo. We go rally driving. We go flying high above a city. One of my favorite starts to one of the episodes is where they literally leap off a mountain and fly, soar in a tandem paraglider, and they soar over the city and drop down, land in the city, and then begin their race in the city. You know, I was saying before, a singing show, a dancing show, and a cooking show, that's what you see. You know, mm-hmm. when you tune into a singing show, that's what you see. And you know where you're going to see it. We have all of those elements, and then we have that whole surprise factor where all of a sudden they're doing something that's totally odd and bizarre and out there. It's a show of surprises, and this season we have a lot of those, whether they're welding something, finding something, building something, singing, dancing, painting, whatever it is. They never know until they rip that envelope and it tells them, go to this place and go do this cool thing. And that's what I love about the show.
Last question for you. What is some of your favorite challenges of the 36 seasons? Is there some that stand out of being the absolute most exciting or most bizarre or most fun for you?
Yeah. I mean, one that I'll never, ever forget is when we were in Switzerland and they had to go to the top of the hill to pick up these big cheese rolls, cheese balls. And I don't know if you've ever picked one of those things up, but they're like 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Have you seen, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, if I never picked one up, but I know what you're talking about.
Dude, they would be, if you're ever in Switzerland and you can't get to a gym and you need to lift something, just go to a cheese shop. You pick them up with one hand. But they're incredibly heavy, and you don't realize how heavy and dense they are until you like grab it and you're like, holy crap. Anyway, they're up the top of the hill and they have this a cheese wheel carrier. It's like a backpack, and then you put the cheese wheels on the back, and then you you can move them easily, and you distribute the weight on your back. It, you know, works well. Well, the teams got them, and they overloaded them, and then they had to make their way down this steep hill, and they lost control. Some of them slipped, and suddenly we had cheese wheels like flying down the hill. Anyway, there were some locals down the bottom. It was over a weekend, I think. And the locals were enjoying, let's just say they were enjoying an alcoholic beverage, local alcoholic beverage at the time. Well, they thought it was the funniest thing in the world to watch these crazy Americans trying to move these big cheese wheels down the hill. They're falling. The cheese wheels are flying down the hill. I mean, people were dodging these flying wheels coming down the hill. And these guys, they thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. They're just cackling away. Like little schoolgirls down there just laughing and carrying on. So that one definitely sticks out. Going back to another challenge we had once where a team, they needed to march. And this one contestant, the team was called Dandrew because it was Andrew and Danny, Andrew and Dan, Dandrew. And one of them just could not get in step. And it was a little bit like when people think they can sing or people think they can dance, but they don't know that they are just so off, but they're right. convinced that they're on. Yeah. And he was going crazy, like trying to figure out why is everybody laughing? He literally was on the off step and we were in hysterics. A little while ago, we were in Ireland and they had to do a song about your trousers, as they say in Ireland, your trousers. Where's my trousers? Anyway, they had to sing the song and do the dance, and it was hysterical. So I love the singing, dancing, coordinating type challenges because you always end up with something fun. You got to laugh with them, not at them, by the way. Right. But yeah, it's fun.
Well, Phil, it's been great talking to you, man. Congrats on such a successful show, and look forward to this season and season 40 coming up very soon too.
Crazy, right? yeah, we're getting ready to head out again. It's really nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a great day. Thanks for the chat.